Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everyone. I am here for the second episode of Car Chat. I'm Sam Moores, and with me today I have Joe Achilles. Hello, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Who I met at Goodwood once, I think. Was that the first time you met?
Probably, or maybe a Gumball a couple of years ago.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah, maybe we met on a Gumball.
Yeah.
Okay. But
yeah, both.
Joe is a big car guy, does some videos, does some driving.
Yeah.
He's about to be on TV, but no one knows about this, so we can't talk about that.
What are you talking about?
But Joe, do you want to introduce yourself and say who you are, what do you do, etc.?
I'm very similar to Sam in many ways, in that, I mean, I'm obsessed with cars, rear-wheel drive cars. I love Porsches, but I'm more into my BMs because they're sort of in my price bracket, I guess. I've got a YouTube channel and Instagram. They're both Joe Achilles. Achilles spelt like the heel. And I run my daily business is a chauffeuring business within London. So if I'm not behind the car of a wheel working, I'm behind the car of a wheel talking about it, or whatever, or talking about cars as we are now.
Yeah, good. And we've known each other for a couple of years. Wow.
Yeah.
A long,
two
long
and
time.
A half years, 3 years.
Done lots of driving. And I have one resounding memory of the first time I went go-karting in the last like 15 years.
Yeah.
Was with Joe. And we went to a karting track in sort of West London. And Joe, you can't see on the podcast, is a big guy. Like, he is seriously tall and pretty muscular. So he must weigh quite a lot more than me. I don't know.
I'm
weigh
about
like 70 kilos.
Yeah, I'm 100.
Yeah, so quite a lot more than me. And he whooped my ass at go-karting. So
yeah, it was a good day. I think that was a track that I'd been to a few times before, to be fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm like yourself, I'm pretty handy behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah, Joe's very quick. Very quick in various vehicles.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll start off with talking about one of the things I wanted to talk about was M2 competition. So I have an M2.
Yep.
You've driven a ton of BMWs.
Yeah.
And you were around, not the day I picked up my car, but very soon after I picked up my M2, and just laughed at how much I knew nothing about BMWs.
Yeah. You were a total non-BMW guy before that, weren't you?
Yeah. But learning fast. And you haven't driven a competition yet.
No, I owned an M2 for about a year when they first came out,
yeah.
Around the time we met, actually, about 2.5 years ago. And yeah, they're brilliant cars. I haven't driven the M2 comp. I've heard mostly good things about it, but some not so great things about
it. Yeah, I think the things that stood out for me when I heard the launch sort of spec, whatever, was the engine changed to the same engine that's in the M4, M3, etc.
Yep.
Detuned a little bit, which probably means you can sneeze on it and it'll be 500 horsepower.
Exactly.
Which is quite an interesting prospect. Potentially quite spiky, but quite an interesting
quite exciting at the
quite
same
exciting.
Time. Yeah.
But then at the launch, the sort of listening to what people said about the competition as a car, there seemed to be some stuff about the new emissions, playing with the ECU or something, like there's something going on with it.
Yeah.
That it's almost like it's a bit, there's a bit missing between your right foot and the wheels in terms of it should be punchy or something. I don't know. It just, I've heard weird things about it.
Yeah, I think that it's almost like they've stunted it at growth a little bit in that sense. I think that this emissions thing has come at a bad time for a lot of cars. I think the M2 comp was one of them.
One of the first ones, yeah.
One of the first ones. And I think the customer cars have been delayed as a result. And yeah, like that's what I've heard. Not that the S55 engine that's in it from the M3 and M4s was ever a very tuneful engine. I always called it the farty engine because it sounds like it's farting all the time.
Yeah.
But it's actually, when you spend a lot of time behind the wheel of one, they're amazing. You know, they've got loads of torque. It's just, I think BMW have never mapped them properly. In the CSs, they really got around that.
Yeah.
But in the early M3s and M4s, they just had too much of a spiky torque curve and were undrivable almost.
Yeah, because I haven't had a chance to. I've only driven an M4 early one, ages ago.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I haven't had a chance to drive any of the sort of evolutions.
Right.
As far as I'm aware, they've got better.
100%. Yeah.
I think the way just, up to now.
The rear axle, they've done things with, the tyres, obviously having like cut twos or P4Ss or whatever help, and also just the suspension setup, so it's just allowed it to put that torque and power onto the ground, which is but yeah, you need to get your hands on I think you would really like a CS, but you need to spend like 4 days in the Alps or Wales caning one, and then you'll walk away going, oh yes. But if you just drove it around here, you'd be like, it feels the same as a normal car to me.
Yeah, because I've never really spent much time with a bigger sort of saloony type car. Like I've always had small cars or sports cars. I've never had a slightly bigger one. And for me, looking at the M2 versus like the M3, it just seems like quite a bigger proposition. It might be a bit more lumbering and such because of that. But I haven't driven one.
No.
And pricing wise, I think, I don't know what the M3s and M4, like the CS has done.
It's crazy. Oh, as in what, where they've gone since?
Like from launch to where they are now, what can you get?
Well, M4s. Yeah.
M4s are like nothing.
No, exactly. Well, M4s, like even 6 or so months ago, I think just after launch, when they realised they weren't selling them, they started, I know dealerships are knocking 15% of them. And these are regarded as, they were playing it, you know, BMW have been playing it along the way that Porsche play the GT cars. You know, oh, it's limited. We're not going to discount it. Oh, we're not selling any of them. So they've discounted. But then they brought, suddenly the M3 came out of nowhere, CS. And I honestly think that was a product of, oh, we've made way too many GTS bonnets and bits and wheels. We've got to throw it on something.
Yeah.
And the M3 is not even as special because it comes with normal doors, so the door card's there, which is great, actually. It doesn't come with the OLED rear lights and things. But actually, in reality, to me, I think that the M3 looks better.
I think it's a cooler looking car.
It's cooler.
Do you prefer driving the M3 or the M4 or in whatever iteration?
I don't know if it's in my mind, but I always feel that the M3, the four-door, it feels better. It feels a bit stiffer. The chassis feels a bit better. And I don't know, honestly, if that's in my mind or not. Not a massive deal, like not a huge difference, but yeah, that's maybe it's because I know the rear arches look better, so, so it feels
faster. You do hear that though. People who have driven both sort of say that they prefer the three,
yeah.
But you know, guys, who knows?
Exactly.
I remember when I was looking for my M2, you could get an M4 for less than when I bought my M2, which was crazy. And then people were like, well, why don't you just get an M4? And at the time, and I still stick by that. M2 sounds better.
Yes.
And is a smaller car, and I just wanted a smaller car. And it looks more like chunk.
It does. I think it's the best looking. And I would even say that your M2 the standard M2, as it were. I haven't seen an M2 comp in real life. I've seen a real pimped up one at the Nürburgring a few months ago, but it had all the M performance bits, and it looked a bit tacky. But the standard M2 looks better than the M2 CS from pictures, anyway.
Yeah.
But in terms of value, I think going back to what you're saying about the CSs and stuff, like, so if you're paying retail, I think an M4 is 90 and an M3 is 87. And when you look at the M2 comp, they start at 49, which isn't much, which is a couple of grand more than what you're, like the normal M2. And I think for the first time in a long time, BMW or whoever it is, usually when they take things away and make it a bit lighter and more special, they put 30%, 40% of the price tag on them. But for once, they actually haven't. And I think that does appeal to me about the M2 comp, is that they haven't taken the piss with the price.
Yeah, and it's also replaced the normal M2.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah.
So I guess they've got to keep it. I'm looking forward to, well, one, I want to have a go at one at some point in time. But it's that thing of, like, to go from an M2 to an M2 competition is such a similar car in reality, but to price difference the two from where my car is now to that, it's getting on towards double in terms of value. And I do enjoy just taking mine to the track and driving it a bit. And then also in the back of my mind, I know the value of the car is what it is. And it's only going down. I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah.
So if I'm still driving it in a year's time and it's worth, I don't know, 20% less or something.
Yeah.
If I put it into a wall, it's a 25 grand car, not a 60 grand car.
Yeah.
Like, obviously you don't want that to happen, but
it does go,
it is there
mind.
In the back of your mind.
Yeah.
Definitely makes a difference. Driving stuff back to back, looping into, I've just been away and got to drive the Gen 2 GT3. PDK, which is it?
Okay.
I don't know. I came back from it in having a really weird sort of thought process about the whole thing. The first day I drove it, like you're saying with driving an M3 CS or something, you need to drive for some time to get used to it.
Yeah.
The first day I drove the GT3, I was with Mr. JWW in the Alps, so couldn't be a better place.
And it was his car, right?
It's his car, So you got to bear that in mind as well. If you're driving something that's not your own, you definitely drive it slower and with more care and attention and everything. But the first day I sort of drove it and we were in Switzerland, so Swiss pace. By the book, everywhere, worried the whole time, really nervous, and it was wet. And the PDK, I just kind of, like, it was almost as if it was just cruising around. I could have kind of been in any Porsche. Obviously, it sounds good. His doesn't have an exhaust yet, but it didn't make much of an impression on me other than it is what it is.
Yeah.
The second time I got to drive it was, we were in Italy. We'd had to queue for 20-something minutes at a traffic light. It was like, turned up and it said 22 minutes on the traffic light.
No.
You're like, okay. But it was through a one-way tunnel, basically.
Oh, was it right on the coast?
No.
Okay, sorry. No. Carry on.
Sort of up from the coast.
Yeah.
And we got to the front of the queue.
Yeah.
Or just asked a couple of people in front of us, do you mind if we go first so that we go through at the front?
Yeah.
We're going to come past you anyway. And I basically had 20 minutes worth of traffic cleared the other end.
Yeah.
And so I probably drove for like 15, 20 minutes sort of on it and then pulled in. And it's like, and we had a bit of chat about the car and that sort of stuff. And then actually all the traffic caught up and I realized I should have kept going.
Yeah.
But after that, the car suddenly came alive. Like all those cars, all the sort of GT cars, between sort of 6, 7, and 9 or whatever it goes to. And when you're driving it at the sort of pace that you end up at those revs and stuff.
Yeah.
The whole thing just wakes up.
Yeah.
And that's when I pulled in and I was just ear to ear, like smile, buzzing, fingers tingling, like everything, just really enjoying driving the car.
Yeah.
And then it was a sort of difficult one to say, what's that comparison to being in like my RS?
Yeah.
For example. And I think at the end of the day, it's a very difficult one to call, I don't think I would have had less fun in my RS. I don't necessarily think I would have more fun. I would have probably driven a bit slower. Okay. With paddles, you can just drive a bit faster.
Because you've got one less thing to think about.
Yeah. But is that better? I don't think so. No. And on the road, anyway. On the track, paddles are pretty great.
Yeah.
Because you just don't think about anything else and just go flat out.
Yeah.
But I think in any car on a good stretch of road, as long as it's half decent and possibly rear-wheel drive, not even necessarily, you have fun.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to say whether it's that car. That car is mega, 100%. Yeah. The rear-wheel steering makes a difference. The front end on that is so much more sort of planted than my car. Like, you can just crank on a bit more lock and it will just
kick
go.
Turning.
Yeah. Whereas this my car might push a bit.
Well, that was always the thing with the 997s, wasn't it? Even the Gen 2s or whatever, they got it better, but it just always felt a bit light in the front end.
Yeah.
Whereas the 992s, they just... sorry, 991s, they've just got on top of that.
Yeah, they've got so much more on top of it and just sort of grip everywhere.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, it was a mega experience.
Yeah.
But I got home and then drove my car this weekend on some, like, proper English backcountry roads. And other than the fact that my car's also quiet at the moment because for the warranty, they have the exhaust put back on.
Yeah.
Which is such... It's like 40% of the car just gone.
Gone,
like, I was enjoying the manual gearbox.
Yeah.
And I think I am just a manual gearbox person for spirited country driving.
Yeah.
You've got to have a manual.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, you lose your license all the time.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing, isn't it? Like you're saying, on a track, you want paddles because it makes you faster or when you're trying to... But actually, in reality, on the road...
Text someone.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's really difficult to text and send emails. But no, in reality, in the road, I think that's why some like really small, like underpowered hot hatches, or sometimes you can have a lot of fun in, say, like a Volkswagen Up, because you're going normal speeds, but everything feels like it's sped up because it's just, it hasn't got the handling, it hasn't got the braking, and it's got
traction.
The manual box.
The traction.
Got the traction. Yeah, it hasn't got the traction, which is kind of what you want. But it is, it's a difficult one to explain to people. And I think... Also, what you're saying there about James's GT3, I think cars are so good these days, like whether it's a normal 3 Series or a normal 911 or whatever, the base donor car that these are based on, the M cars and GT3 cars. And they're great. For the average punter, they are the better car in a way. Like the normal version of your car, it's a better... GTS is better than the GT3. For the average punter, it is. It's a better ride, it's more comfortable, it's quieter. And so when you jump in a new GT3, they're that good anyway that you're like, oh, okay, well, this feels good. And it's not until, like with the new M3s, M4s, when you really start pushing them, then you're like, oh, okay, now it makes... Now I understand, yeah.
And it's mental because you have to be... To be in that performance envelope, you've got to be really on it.
And
to be that on it on a road...
It's
interesting. the performance capability of these cars is just so high.
Exactly. You've got to be a good driver like yourself to even get near that envelope, firstly, to experience the car moving around. Because I think the majority of people, no matter what they say, that especially some of the people that can afford these very nice exotic cars, they can't even get near the envelope of the performance unless they're on track and they're pushing silly speeds. But I think you've got to be a certain level of driver to actually experience some of that GT3-ness and go, oh, yeah, now I felt it going around. Unless you can.
It's so tricky, that. Because, like you said, like with the sort of base spec models, everything is actually, if you remove the engine, which is obviously a phenomenal part of it, everything else is kind of, for 95% of the time, a better experience in a lower run. Like, the suspension is nicer. Yeah. It's like, it's comfier. Your tyres probably have more sidewall.
Yeah.
Like, everything about it is a bit comfier and better.
Yeah.
And it's more sound insulated and everything else. So, you're paying for this, like getting into a 675 LT or something.
Yeah.
They're much harder to drive.
Yeah.
Like, my RS, because it's got massive rear tyres, you're driving down the motorway. If you're in the left lane and a lorry's been down there once...
Tram line all over the place.
You're just like tramlining and like hunting all over the place.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're in... And same in like something like the LT or that sort of stuff. Whereas if you're in something with sensible tyres, you don't have any of these issues. So I think it must be interesting for when people first get in those cars, I guess it's that sort of sense of involvement that it gives you.
Yeah.
The fact that your car literally just wants to turn into a hedge all the time.
yeah.
But then you suddenly go, it sort of wakes you up a little bit more.
Yeah.
But it's a weird one, how we sort of chase after these cars that are harder to drive, less comfortable.
Louder.
Quite often have more grip.
Yeah. More expensive to buy, to run, to own, everything.
Yeah.
But yet, they're the ones you want. Bit like women. No, sorry, I didn't just say that.
Yeah, it's tricky, that one. I guess I had a couple of random questions for you.
Yes.
Which may lead into other stuff. So let's say a BMW M2 competition.
Yeah.
We're saying it's like 60-ish thousand pounds.
Well, no, 49 list.
Yeah, but it's going to be...
Yeah, once you... Well, you can only add a few bits and bobs to it. I think
okay,
the top spec one's like 56, but then you can get all the end performance stuff that adds.
Which they are trying to push.
Yes, like the carbon roof.
Okay, so let's say 56.
Yeah.
So you could get a new M2 competition for 56.
Yeah.
Or you could get a lot of other cars secondhand.
Mm.
What would you
get? What would I get? It's a hard one, but I mean, when you say a lot of other cars... Like, well, we're just talking
say
about...
The BMW, okay, let's say there's other BMWs you could buy.
Yeah. Well, other bit, yeah, so you could get a really nice M3 competition pack or M4.
Which is mental.
Yeah, which is mental. Because that's got the tuned-up version of the engine. It's, you know... But then would you want something that's new?
Well, that's something that whenever people say that question, because it's not really a valid...
No.
Argument when you say, oh, you can get a new this, and then like, yeah, but you could buy a 5-year-old M5, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
And actually, some people, when they, the reason people get a new car is they want the new tech, they want the warranty, don't have to do the MOT, like all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that becomes a very difficult
question. Thing. Well, I think when I got my original M2, a lot of people said to me, in the comments of my videos and stuff, oh, you could have gone out and bought a secondhand M3 or M4 for that. And, number of factoring reasons for me with that particular car and with it moving forward to an M2 comp is if you're paying finance, you always get much better deals on new cars, much better APRs and stuff. So the new car effectively works out a lot cheaper, even if the list prices are the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's that to factor in. There's the warranty, things like that, and running costs. But for me, yeah, I don't know. I think now that the new M2's got the same engine, and the M2 would appeal more to me only because I've driven a lot of M3s and M4s, and I want something new that I haven't. Yeah, different. I think there's too many variables to sort of make that. I think in some cases you're mad to maybe buy a new or buy the used one, but I think in that it's too difficult.
It's tricky. It's definitely tricky.
Yeah.
You have driven at the moment. I'm trying to. Like, every day I wake up, I think, like, most petrol heads and go, it's like, should I sell a car, buy a car? Like, all these sorts of things you ponder.
Yeah.
And the more time I spend on track, the less I feel like I need any fast road cars, full stop.
Yeah.
So I've got the Radical, and I'd love to drive that more. The only problem with driving the Radical is support for it. So having people make sure it runs and works is quite expensive. So that makes taking it to the track quite expensive.
Sure.
But I get to drive that really fast and, like, on it.
Yeah.
And if I take it to the track, I'm okay with it going in the gravel.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have any paintwork that's worth... It's got no paintwork. You just duct tape stuff.
Yeah.
You hoover it out and you put it back in. Whereas if I put my M2 into the gravel, I'd be pretty upset.
Yeah.
If I put my GT3 into the gravel, I'd be really, really, really upset. So that means you can't really use those cars for what they're designed for. My GT3RS, in theory, I should be using it on the track all the time.
Yeah.
But it's too expensive a proposition to crash.
Yeah.
And therefore, you drive it slower. Not necessarily slower than a slower car or whatever. You're still driving quite on it. But you're 1/10 back or 2/10 off so that you never end up in the gravel. Whereas the Radical, I can brake as or a little bit after
over your limits,
over the limit, and you can float around that barrier.
Yeah.
And so what I think I'll probably end up doing is having maybe I'd like to have one car daily and then one car that's like a sports car that does GT. Like, if I'm going anywhere, I take that. Whether it's a random track day, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Road trips, whatever. So my normal sort of daily car,
yeah,
I think needs to be a bit more comfy.
Yep.
Because I spend most of the time in the M2 on a motorway.
Yep.
Or just cruising around town, other than the odd track day and stuff. And it's not necessarily the best motorway cruiser.
No.
At all. No. In any shape or form. And you've driven quite a lot of comfy cars.
Mm.
And your day-to-day in your chauffeuring business.
Yeah.
Are the sort of creme de la creme of the comfy cars.
Yep, yep.
Do you have any thoughts on what might be?
A very good comfy GT car almost.
Well, yeah, but the problem is, like, I kind of want it M2 size, which is, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, because I find, I was just going to say that, yeah, I find, well, in, say the BMW lineup, the bigger you go, the more comfortable they tend to be.
Yeah.
But then the bigger you go, the worse they are being a GT car or a sports car. Something like the new M5 that I recently drove to, so the F90 M5, recently drove that to the Nürburgring, did lots of miles out there in it. And I tell you what, as like a barnstorming sort of Autobahn, it's one of those cars that you would get in like I did. I unfortunately first tried it at Bedford. And initially it was like, oh, it's just too heavy. It's too big.
Especially if you've driven other cars.
Exactly. And I jumped out of an, ironically, they put us in an M2 first and then into that. And it just felt very disappointing, except for on the straights. But then I did a few more laps and I started to get it. But then again, once I'd spent some time on the road, which it's designed for, it was great. And once I'd done some long journeys in it, in the big seats, and I was like, oh, what more do you want in life? Okay, it's not a track car at all. But if you're out with your mates on a weekend chasing them through Wales, it will do that, especially in the bad weather. It will probably beat most of your friends in their rear-wheel drive. But that's those sort of cars. But like you said, then they're not. It's a big, heavy car.
It's a big, heavy car.
And it's 100 grand.
I drove Tim's M5.
Yes, yeah.
And one of the things I was talking to you with the passenger I was with was the comfort.
Yeah.
And you drove to the Nürburgring, so not a lot in the UK.
No.
Which...
Oh, okay. You drove it more over here.
I just drove it down to, where do we go? Down to Goodwood, I think.
Right.
And then back.
Yeah.
And there's loads of bumpy country roads.
Yeah.
The M models all have stiffer suspension.
Yeah.
And like you're paying for to be less comfortable.
yeah.
And I think that's something that I love the sound of a good engine.
Yeah.
And I love the M2 because it looks badass.
Yeah.
But maybe I need to have the non-M
M
version of a car. Like whether it's a C63, but just get the
C500
or whatever. You know, like the non...
The top of the range of the normal one. Yeah.
Yeah, like the not taut one for normal comfort. The M5 I found interesting. Very fast. Four-wheel drive. Even when you turn everything off.
Yeah.
Still, a bit like we were talking about I drove the R8 rear wheel steer recently, and that would take acceleration. You just, not necessarily like flat, but like put your foot down and it would just take it. The grip would just go.
Yeah.
Which on the road meant that actually it wasn't very different to a four wheel drive one because you're just not, you can't push to that poor performance envelope that it starts moving around because it's got such sticky, big tyres.
Yeah.
It's not doing that. And I think the M5 was a bit similar. Even if you turn everything off, like disable everything, put it in rear wheel drive, disable all the systems, which is what you have to do.
Yeah.
If you want it in rear wheel drive, you have to turn everything off.
Yeah.
Which is like this is put it in a hedge mode.
Yeah.
And then even then, I think we were on a slight incline, but from stationary, like full beams.
It would lay it down.
It would just go.
Wow.
And you think like an M5 should...
With over 600, I think they rate them at 600. I think they put out realistically 650-ish.
Yeah.
How does that work?
How does it work? I think that it was a slight hill.
Yeah.
So most of the weight of the car is on the rear.
Yeah.
And there's quite sticky tyres that were warm.
But still, you'd think it would just snap
it should just smoke it.
Yeah.
I think it's the, it's probably torque limited.
Right.
In first gear.
When it's just in rear wheel drive.
And probably in both. Yeah. Probably split between the two different ones.
Yeah.
Like, so many cars now. Like, it's an odd thing. But you kind of, like, you get in an M product car or something like that.
Yeah.
SLS is a funny one. Like, you kind of, every now and then, you want to just do a burnout.
Yeah.
And, like, smoke some rubber. Yeah. SLS will not let you.
Or would it not?
No, you can turn everything off, but it won't let you do it.
So, as in, it won't turn everything off really, then?
Yeah. C63 will.
Yeah.
You see C63, so you burn out all day long.
Yeah.
all they do. But it's weird that, like, you thought, I kind of like, there's something I like about the G3 RS.
Yeah.
That when you get in it, there's a couple of buttons.
Yeah.
And they're not like, you don't have to hold them down. You don't have to press OK.
Yeah.
There's like an everything off button, and it's like, ding, off. And that's brilliant. It. That's yeah. it. Yeah. Like, no warnings. There's a little warning pops up.
Yeah.
But that's it. You don't have to hold anything. Well, the, you and then think, you're on your own.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's like anyone, especially yours with the scaffolding and stuff in it, like, you get, it's like you're getting into a race car on the road.
Yeah.
So if you press something that goes, I know I'm in a race car, everything off, that's it. Like, I'm sorry. It's being, it's German. It's like, you know, no personality, but you know, you're on your own, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. End of story. Like, that's not, it. None of this. Oh, warning. Like, you sure? Yes. You definitely sure? Yes. Yeah. Have you rung your mum? Yes. Have you rung your dad? Yes. Emergency. And it's like,
have you called your insurance?
Have you called your insurance yet? Look in the small print. You're not actually even allowed to turn it off. I think the new M5, like, on track.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on. Like, seriously.
Some tracks in America, I remember, were banning some new BMWs because you can't disable all the systems. And it has... For example, you might be driving on a track and there might be a merge line. It's like a white line that will run across the track. And the camera systems in the car think you're changing lane without intentionally changing lane and might slam on the brakes or put in steering correction, which on a track is...
No. It's got someone coming down the inside in their million-pound Ferrari or something.
Your car just suddenly pins into the wall.
Sorry about that. It was the lane departure system.
So, like, I like having some systems. And I think one of the ones that did that also was the low-speed braking system.
Yeah. You know,
which I would quite like to have in a day-to-day car, because those accidents... I have never actually done it.
But been very, very close.
But I've been very, very close when your car's just creeping forward and you're going 1 mile an hour.
Well, you're watching a roundabout of the lights and they go green. And even though you've got good peripheral vision, you then creep or move. But then the person
in front doesn't
move. And then you scream at them. But actually, you're like, well, actually, I should have really waited for them.
I just drove in the back of them.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's tricky. All right, what's the next? I've got another little question. So, I don't know what the long and short of that one was, really.
I can't remember what the question was.
Basically, if I had a comfy car, kind of interesting, ideally small, daily car. Now, one of the ones that's always interested me is the C63, because they just sound really good and they look kind of cool.
They are.
Annoyingly, they've been adopted by a certain type of person.
Yes, that is the thing that sort of puts me off a lot of the AMG products, is some of the people that do drive them. And I know people say that about BMWs, I get that. And I suppose it's true with all brands, maybe not so much RS products so much, but it's a shame, because I think, the C63, I honestly think it is one of the best cars on the planet on sale today. Like, regardless of price, anything, it's just a package. I've not driven the new one, I don't know what the ride's like in it. But I know the E63 ride is not great. So, but I've heard the C63 is better. So
we'll see. So I'll try and.
I'll tell you what is a good ride. A bit left field, and this people are probably going, "Oh, BMW fanboy coming out here again." But Alpina products,
okay,
their ride. It's one thing that I think is better than anything else they do. Is they make their ride of the cars so good. But in this country, we're a bit stuffed because they're expensive, and also there's just none about. There's no used ones, and they're long order time, so it kind of puts people off. But something like a B3S Touring,
See, I don't know much about the Alpina products.
No,
I see them occasionally, and I know that they exist.
Yeah,
but I think generally they don't appeal to my. The thing that drew me to the M2 is like the badass
looks.
Chunkery of it.
Yeah.
Alpinas don't have that.
It's the opposite almost. They're
the opposite.
Isn't it?
They look like a complete vanilla car, but underneath it's got all the stuff and the suspension sorted.
Yeah.
I did take my M2 and I was going to get the suspension changed.
Yeah.
What
to like coilovers or something?
Yeah. And I keep umming and ahhing. The person I went to, I didn't have a very good experience and ended up not going with them.
Okay, yeah.
But you changed the suspension on your...
M140.
140.
Yeah.
And did you go... You went for coilovers?
No, well, I ended up going for...
Or did you lower it?
So originally I'd lowered it on
IBAC springs, so they're the same company that make the original BMW springs. Yeah. So the spring rate effectively is the same, or very close to, so the ride wasn't affected.
Yeah.
But I've got adaptive on, that's the thing, the M2 doesn't come with adaptive, whereas the M Lights, the M140 that I've got, does come with adaptives. So I was a bit hesitant about going for coilovers because I thought I'd lose that adaptive function, although this they'd be much better than the stock setup. But then Bill Stein recently brought out adaptive dampers. So, and they basically, I put the original spring on that. So it's just a damper unit.
Yeah.
So literally like for like to do.
Okay.
And I've only had them on for what, about 10 days, and I've not done that many miles on them, but I've taken it within the first 45 minutes. I had it out of Rockingham circuit. And I'll tell you what, it to me, like in terms of performance, it felt amazing. Like the car felt like it was so much more supportive. It felt like I'd upped the spring rate because the compression, I guess, is just much
better. So is this ride height, has this gone back up again? Or no, it's the same as same when you had it lowered?
Yeah, exactly. So it sits on the same springs and the same ride height. But it's just the difference between comfort and sports is much bigger. So in comfort, it feels just as good as the original setup, which is very good. But when you whack it into sports, the whole car... You know what's that electronic stability they have on cars these days that keep them flat?
Yeah.
It feels so much better than the stock setup in terms of how the chassis stays flat. But it almost feels like it's that. It's not, but I'm used to the car rolling so much before. Yeah. So it's suddenly much more supportive, which means obviously you don't get the outside edge or the front tyres used to just destroy within a few laps because it would roll. So it's very much closer to an M2, but it's still... I said this on my channel recently. I've spent a lot of money on my...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
M140 in the last 6 months. Upgrading this, putting an LSD on it, different brakes. Feels great, and it's such a great road car. But in reality, it's still a long way behind your M2. Like a stock M2. And that's why anyone that, you know, you can tune the product up so much, but really an M car is an M car for a reason, and out of the box it's still far better than
mine. It's tricky, that question of like tuning stuff, and I think a lot of people go down that route of buying they can get into a car now, so they get into it and then they tune it over time and they spend the money. And it's a very easy one to go into because you do it in bits and bobs and over time.
Exactly.
But when you come to sell it, you just get hammered.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Which you never get your money back. And in fact, sometimes people aren't interested in the car because it's been tuned, and I'll probably end up reversing it all back.
But that's to
stock.
You basically have to put it back to stock and pretend like you've never done anything to it.
Yeah.
And like put on back your silver surrounds on the front and all that sort of stuff, and remove all the badges that were black and put them back to silver and be like, one careful lady owner. But it's an interesting one, that. And someone was, I was on like some thread or something recently, and they were talking about tuning like a base model car versus the M car, or like a non-RS GT product versus a GT product in like a Porsche range or something.
Yeah.
And let's say you take a normal 911 Carrera and then track it a lot, and then you upgrade all the stuff.
Yeah.
If you buy a GT car and spend a bit more, depending on whatever the price works out at, that car has, the whole car has been optimized for track driving.
Yeah.
So like your diff, your drive shafts, every single bit of suspension, everything is built to take hard driving.
Yeah.
Which when you upgrade a car, you don't do everything.
No.
You do bits and then
stuff breaks.
Yep.
And that generally seems to be what happens. People like up the horsepower and then something else will explode.
Yep.
And then...
or something else can't quite cope with it. Or...
exactly. Or you might put really grippy tyres on your car as the first thing.
Yeah.
And then just destroy your suspension because the car's not designed for having level of grip.
Yeah. And it's the same. And like, I've got to the point now where my car, like I said, it feels great on track. But what's it suffering from? The fact that I can't stay in my seat because suddenly the extra suspension, as you say, even though I haven't changed the Pilot Supersports, which are great, they're now finding a lot more grip. So the loads are higher. And so therefore the seats are now struggling.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, wait a second. How much is a pair of like bucket? Like this is getting ridiculous. But if I've got buckets in it, it won't be a great daily anymore. So it's like, cars come out, especially German cars, they leave the factory with a purpose, don't they? And you can improve bits in them, but you never want to try and improve something completely or change it. It comes, you know, it's there for a reason.
Unless you're starting from a very high starting point.
Yes.
Like you're that crazy guy that's bought a GT2 RS and you're modifying that.
Oh, then
to get faster. Or
But and you've got an endless account. Go for
and
it.
And that guy recently who had bought an AMG GTS.
Yep.
And was about to spend a lot of money, has spent some money adding more horsepower to it.
Right.
And at the end, he wants like 1,000 horsepower out of a GTS. And I had this conversation with him, said, like, look, what are you trying to get out of this? And he wants he's got big budget, but he wants the novelty factor of, he likes his car, but he wants it to have 1,000 horsepower. And I was like, well, why don't you just not do that? Buy a GTR.
Yeah.
And then give that more power.
Yeah.
Because all the components will be a lot better than your starting point. And I suggested, because I knew Tim had taken his car to Rentec.
Yep.
And as far as I'm aware, there's been no issues whatsoever. And they're the sort of person, like you take a Porsche to like Manti or someone.
Yeah, people that really clue
up. Really do. And they're German, so they think about all the stuff. Not saying other people don't, but they really do.
Yeah.
And that's the bit. His car, he's had it tuned a couple of times.
Yeah.
And he's like, things keep breaking, blah, 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 blah. Like, it's only given putting out 500 horsepower and it's meant to be putting out 650. And it's like, But if you take... I said, okay, you take it to Rentec and they might give you 700 or 750.
Yeah.
That will be 700, 750. There's no, like, that will be 700, 750 in all conditions, in all whatever. Like, someone might say they'll give you 1,000, but...
yeah, it may not be 1,000. That one special day, perfect temperatures
before it explodes,
before everything gives way. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think he was going with another company that I hadn't heard of, but I think they're quite respected. But
yeah,
spending a lot of money
on a
to get it.
Yes, that's
brilliant. And a GTS, and you're like, why don't you just get the nice, like the
bling one.
Spend a bit. If you're going to spend a ton of money, just spend a bit more.
Yeah,
doing the initial purchase of your car.
Yeah,
but that's an interesting one. Been to Bedford quite a lot recently, and in the M2, and there's a real like scene seems to be of like M135i owners and stuff. Every time I'm there in the M2, I always chat to some other BMW owners.
Yeah,
and normally if someone's taking a stock car, is chatting about how their brakes have like given up after one lap.
Yeah, yeah.
Which Bedford is tough. Like the GT circuit, I think most of it is just savage on brakes.
Yep.
But I remember going with someone and their car, it was a normal-ish 135i.
Yep.
And so that's an open diff.
Was it Tom? Not Tom.
Yeah, it was Tom.
Yes. Yeah.
And his car was kind of all over the place coming out of corners.
Yeah.
Like it kept like dumping power to one wheel, which then out you go again. And then he turned everything off. He said apparently it like locks up better when you turn everything off.
Okay.
And he turned everything off. And the EDIF, I think it's an EDIF worked 10 times better.
Oh.
And I pushed him the whole day. I was like, just turn everything off, but dial back your driving.
Yeah.
Like drive slower, but turn everything off and just give it a go. Because it may be worse, it may be better. And he came back after having turned everything off and was like, oh, it's a game changer.
Wow. It's like, so the diff actually worked better when it was
off? When everything off.
Okay.
And
well, that's interesting.
Which is odd and like a weird thing.
Well, that's what Pete from Petrohead Tours has always said. Like, everything off on the road, he's just constantly, he's like, it just finds so much more grip.
Yeah.
So maybe, maybe it is. Maybe it's the electronics. Maybe the EDIF and the electronics are two separate things, I'm guessing they are.
Yeah.
So they're basically battling with each other. So as soon as you turn one off, then the other one can
It can just focus on finding new traction and not spinning up.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely, I am so comfortable driving the M2 with everything off. Definitely on track. And people are like, oh, why did you turn it off? It's like, well, when it's on, it's really annoying. Like, it's in the way before it should be in the way.
Yeah.
And you come across some traction control systems that let you enough slip that it's okay. Like, and it's past where, if you're trying to go quickly, it's past that point.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You're so more you're into like a drifting point.
You're never feeling like it's raining your back in any sense,
And then you're like partly around a corner and the power cuts. You're like,
And then that causes, sometimes that causes understeer or, in, especially in rear-wheel drive cars, I've the couple of or near crashes I've had in like an M3 is when I had to have everything on with an instructor next to me and I've come piling into a corner and it's just, I haven't been able to balance anything on the throttle, and then it's just caused the whole car to start pushing. And it's like, but if that was all off, or even in MDM, whatever, I could have got the rear end to rotate a bit, and it would just set me up nicely, and I would have been out. Not big angles, just a tiny, tiny bit. But when it's all off, suddenly the car just goes, it goes all lit. It's like, no.
And it kills. It kills everything. I do not encourage anyone to drive with traction control off. I would say, go to a track and then work through the systems.
Yes.
Until you're comfortable driving.
Build your way up. Yeah, but
don't just suddenly on the road, because that's how you end up in a hedge.
Yeah.
But yeah, it makes such a big difference to some cars. Like my RS has like a half off, which is the ESC part of it, which is like the, I guess, the slip angle part of it, versus the traction control. You can turn that off and the car is much nicer. Like if you're driving on something that's slightly bumpy surface, it lets a little bit, even just going a straight line and you go over a little bump in full everything, it would cut the power as you're going over the bump as the tires come off. And that's like,
so then suddenly there's just nothing as you pan off
and
that
or bump. You just like, you just notice the lack of the acceleration and you don't, it's not smooth anymore.
Yeah.
It becomes like a bit more jerky. Whereas if you turn it like half off, it's still all the time.
Yeah.
But you can just drive better.
Yep.
And more on it.
Yep.
With it on, it's a good fun though.
Yeah. I'm not sure Sideways Sid knows where the. I think he just defaults to.
Yeah, he just pulls the fuses. He rips all the fuses out. It's like, what's that one? ABS, get rid of that.
Literally, yeah.
I want to have a go with some of the other M cars on track.
Yeah,
just to see what they're like.
Need to try and set something up, because their M experience days are good, but you don't ever get to really. That's kind of what you. I don't know. That's, you know, that's what I wish for, and probably you as well. I'd love to just go somewhere where the tyres are like being provided and the cars are being provided. Basically, everything is, and then you can actually learn how to like just spend all day skidding and just learning, you know, and then also maybe setting lap times with everything on, everything half on, or MDM and everything off, and then. And just learning those sort of limits and exactly what the track
is. It's fun. And what I'm doing at the moment is, just as you can see in the corner of the room, we have two boxes.
Oh,
and it's two exhaust boxes for my old 911.
Oh, I saw that on your Instagram the other day.
And at the moment, it's quite loud.
Yeah,
but it's quite boomy, and it has quite fat exhaust pipes on the back.
Are they it's the one that when I came to pick up with you,
Yeah. Although it's now just, I think it had three when
that's
I picked
right.
it. It's now, I got rid of the
A blank on it had, didn't it?
Yeah. But basically it's quite boomy inside.
Okay.
And I actually, period correct, is slightly thinner diameter, smaller diameter pipes.
Yep.
But also what that does is it turns the noise sort of from a really boomy to more of a upper end rasp.
Okay.
So it should make it slightly better on the motorway. So yeah. I've got one that's like that, and then I've got one that's as quiet as stock Boggo can go.
Yeah.
So that I can take the car to Bedford and have a go with it.
Ah. So it's over noise restrictions at the moment.
Yeah, way over. Because I really want to have a go at Bedford just to like, because I've been watching all these like Peter Auto, the 2 litre cup, have you seen any of that?
Yeah,
old Porsches ragging around. And they just look like they're having so much fun. I slightly think that the tyres I've got on it, some Toyo somethings, but they're quite a sort of modern tyre shape, like flat, stiff tyre walls, quite grippy, might not be the best. because I think they'll probably be quite grippy until they're really not.
Okay, so you think they'll give away quite quick, yeah.
But I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah.
See what it's like.
Yeah.
Because I've had the car a bit sideways before, and it's very much like grip, 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 grip. Whoa! Right.
Do you think that's because it's just so... It's quite a short wheelbase, isn't it?
Quite short, and it's got a lot of grip.
Okay. Because the rears, what are they, like 295s or something silly?
I don't know. They're not massive, but on an old car, they're quite big.
Big, yeah.
Versus what it would have been on stock.
Yeah.
So maybe at some point in time, I need to, for jokes, put some small wheels on it.
Yeah. Like
tiny wheels.
Space savings.
Yeah, and then turn that, whatever it's got, 260 horsepower into like the equivalent of 500. And then have a hoon around, because... Being over the limit is more fun than being under the limit.
Yeah, definitely.
Irrespective of whatever speed that is.
Yeah.
That reminds me. I went to that karting track east of London. Kent?
Buckmore. Yes.
I had a really good day the other day with someone's stag do.
Yeah.
But you come in, and I definitely realised what... And you have no idea until the end of the session what was... like. How quick you were or anything.
Yeah, relative to
whatever. It's such a difficult metric to go by in terms of you want like something to tell you. Either follow someone who's really fast.
Yeah.
And then you can see where they're faster and then you can talk to them about it.
Yeah.
And then they can follow you or whatever. But that like 10-minute format of you go out for 10 minutes, come back in, and they're like, oh, your fourth lap was the fastest. You're like, oh, but I didn't but like...
What did I do?
What did I do to make it fast?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think... My goal in racing and doing all these things at the moment is to become a better driver.
Yeah.
And obviously you're then quicker.
Yeah.
But just better all around car control, drifting, whatever, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And from what I've spoken to a lot of pro drivers recently that I've been at tracks with, and one thing that came up a lot is the reason they get so good and the difference between a pro and a very good amateur is a pro can get in any car,
yeah,
and within someone like Hamilton will do one corner,
and he can
and feel he then works out exactly how much grip is, and then applies that straight away to the rest of the track. Whereas an amateur might do three laps to build up or five before they're at full pace.
Yeah.
Whereas a pro is at full pace after half a lap.
Yeah,
because they know they've done the calculations. And talking to someone that said one of the reasons ways you get so good at is you're driving different cars all the time.
Yeah.
Because you're driving, you know, doing different day, a day with McLaren, a day with Ferrari, this guy's got a GT3, like all that sort of stuff. So you learn a little bit about all cars and then you can then reapply that to other cars.
Yeah.
Because let's say I just drove my M2 on the track and did 50 track days a year, obviously, if you're having some instruction and stuff. But I then got in a front rear-wheel drive car or a Porsche or something different.
Yeah.
It's going to take you a lot of time to adapt and learn what works in that car.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to do at the moment is like get the old Porsche out and just see what goes with that. Like drive the M2 a bit, drive that, drive the new Porsche, try and drive a bunch of different stuff.
Broaden your sort of horizon.
Broaden your horizons. Your
talents,
yeah.
Yeah.
Cause you get like Ben's one of those people. He'll get in stuff and he's just bloody quick and,
instantly
straight away.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting.
Yeah. No, it is. It's just getting the opportunity, I guess, to do it, isn't it?
That's the thing. You're like, hey guys, can you just send me some track time for free, please?
Yeah, just some random cars. Yeah.
Yeah. And a good selection of cars.
Yeah.
Right. I have 5 questions. I say 5 questions, it's definitely not 5 questions. It's just the number of questions that I'm gonna randomly ask you.
Okay. And
see what your answers.
Okay.
Do you have a most memorable driving trip or journey, or could even be a section of road like that you've driven, that like a one time that stands out? It's quite a difficult one for a lot of people.
It's difficult,
and it could be a different answer next week.
I mean, there's been a few. I've been lucky to drive on a lot of amazing roads this year, but just the one. What's that?
You're talking about your hands.
Oh, sorry,
your face.
Sorry, listeners. I think that one. I don't know what the road was, but it was going through Italy, Tuscan Hills,
And in my still my favourite driver's car, but that's only because I haven't spent much time in a GT3s or GT3Rs, which is the Porsche Cayman GT4. Mm. And I was with Ben, who we were just talking about. Ben was passengering and we were following Tim in his 675. And it was just this road that went on forever. I don't know what the road was, but it was magic. There was no traffic around. It was just a combination of beautiful countryside, amazing road and tarmac, weather, and being in the Cayman, and just, oh, it was just amazing. It was magical. The car, you know, when you're in something, you get into the rhythm, into the groove, a bit like when you go for a good go-kart session or something, and the car's just moving around and dancing underneath you, and you're just like, it becomes so easy.
Yeah.
But you're going very fast. You're flowing.
You're flowing, yeah. And you're using up a very small amount of your sort of brain capacity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But everything's working, yeah.
Everything's working. Although if you needed to go a little bit faster, you probably couldn't go that much quicker. But that was just... And that was a Cup 2 2016. That always stands out just because I love that car. And, you know, it was great having a good friend next to me. And it was just a very special moment. But I've had lots. But yeah, I guess that's the one. That's the one.
It's definitely... Yeah, it's a tricky one to call.
It is.
But you do. Sometimes things just come together. And it's not necessarily... the best car you've ever driven.
No.
Or whatever. But I think one common factor for me always seems to be you're with good people.
Yeah.
It's always with good people.
Yeah.
It's normally a good location.
Yeah.
If you get to drive a lot of places, probably the better ones are going to be cooler locations.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just how it all comes together.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Next question.
Yes.
If you could drive one car...
Oh, no.
...for the rest of your life... And I don't know whether I'm going to put a caveat on it. I think you're allowed something that you can put stuff in. Like, it doesn't have to be the one that you have to move house in, etc.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't have to be super practical.
But your other car, let's say, is like a 500-pound...
Sphere.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so, but other than that, one car... For the rest of your life.
I have to say, it's probably going to be pretty simple. And ironically, it's a car that... It's one of two cars that I haven't driven. It would either be a GT3 RS of your era.
Yeah.
Where I think that was like the pint. 2010, I think, is when, like, the 1M... There were so many cars around that era that I think when we'll look back on... We won't, but next generation after, we'll look back on and go, that was the sweet spot. That was when cars were so good, but they weren't too good. You know, Not too digital. They didn't have masses of traction. They weren't perfect, like yours. Front end's a bit vague, but that's what makes it so good. And so I think... But I've never really driven... one, and I've not driven one hard, but just this is going off like what I've heard. So either that, and ironically, another car that I've not driven and that you've recently driven, a GT3, the 991.2, but I'd go manual just because that, you know, I could live with that. I'd just love to, but I'd also go what's it called, the touring, like Chris Harris sort of stuff, like that. I think now that would probably be the pinnacle for me, like a manual GT3 touring. I mean, wow, yeah, that's it. Like, yeah. I'm happy. Leave me alone. I'm just going to go driving.
It's a very ticks all boxes car, a touring. I don't know why they didn't do a touring with back seats.
No, because that would have been...
Like, that actually would have been a genius idea.
Yeah, because that would have made more sense around the touring name as well, wouldn't it? It would be like... And you can't spec it with rear seats, no.
No, you can't at all.
Because I bet you they would have, that would have been, but then I would have said they would have sold,
I would have almost said they would have sold more,
but actually, they can't.
There's a lot for sale in the UK.
At how much money?
Okay, yeah, over list.
What are the touring going for, 200?
They're listed at like 180.
Okay.
But there's a couple for sale, and I don't know whether people are buying them. Normal GT3s are 150 to 170 now.
Yeah.
I think they're coming down. I think a lot of people bought them.
To flip them. Yeah.
Or bought them, liked it, but thought, I'll make 30K.
Why not?
I'll sell it. It's a very difficult proposition to turn down. Yeah. If someone says you can have one, you're a bit of an idiot not to take it.
If you've got the money to buy one.
Even if you finance it or whatever, if you can work it out and then you sell it a couple months later.
Yeah.
But it's a shame for... I just, it is what it is. It, obviously, it would be great to have one of those cars at least. But yeah, I think that's a good choice.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, keep an eye on yours. It might not be there in the morning.
Yeah, I won't tell you where the keys are. Okay, next question. 5-car garage.
Oh, no.
And I'm going to make it semi-easy, unlimited value.
Unlimited value. Okay, well, all right, let's start. All right, so let's start with the GT3.2 Touring.
Touring,
That's in there. That's
does that have like a slot name, or are you putting that under a category or anything? Or
just that is Sunday porn.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Sunday summer porn, we'll call that, yeah? Right. Next slot.
Got a daily?
Yeah, so daily...
has to fit into your current sort of lifestyle.
Current lifestyle?
Probably not a boat.
Yeah, no, not definitely not a boat. There is a little stream that runs through my village, though, but no, a boat wouldn't work on that. I think I would genuinely have... as a daily, I would... think about this. This is a difficult one. I think... I honestly think I would have an M2 competition.
Yeah.
And obviously, if I had this dream 5-car the garage, I'd probably swap out the suspension for something that was a bit more pliant.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, M2 competition. If I had GT3 in a manual, then I'd probably have that in a DCT.
Yeah.
Because then it's a bit more dailyable.
Yeah, yeah.
I could turn that into my little tractor as well if I wanted to. Next would be something that would be much more track biased. I've not driven radicals that you can road legal them, right? Not really, no.
I think you can get they do an RXC.
Okay.
Which is like one of the bigger ones.
Yeah.
I think it's a twin turbo V6.
Yep.
And they do like a 450 or maybe even a 500 horsepower one.
Wow.
They're pretty mental looking. So they do one of them, which would be, obviously that would do both. You could just have a track only car.
Well, I think I would want something that I could. No, I think something appeals to me about being a track only car that can be naughtily driven on the road, so I could drive it to a track. And so yeah. I think something like the new Aero Atom that's coming out, the Atom 2.
Yeah.
That I've driven the one and they're just entertaining and they're good value for what they are. So I think an Atom 2 or whatever that's going to be called, supercharged version of that. Yes, please. So now I've got those three. So that's...
Would you have... other sort of things that people may have done, like an older car?
Yes, but then this is probably going to sound a bit boring, and it's almost like I've basically copied your garage so far. I would love something like your era of 911, or an RS, or something. Oh, I mean, they're beautiful, and they're the only old-fashioned car, me being 6'4", that actually can get away with fitting in and just about using, whereas most classics don't appeal to me because I physically can't fit in them. I can't drive a Countach, not that I'd want one, but I couldn't, you know, the foot...
That is so tricky, yeah, because I'm 6 foot, and I was always annoyed growing up because my dad's side of the family are all really tall.
Yep.
They're like, my dad's 6'2", but everyone else is like 6'4".
Yep.
And like huge. But... I can get into most cars now, which you run into the problem that
I'm too tall. I'm a bit wider, and I'm just. So maybe something like a classic, what's that? Like an RS 2.7 RS,
2.7 RS, something like that.
Something like that. Cool. And then so then that would leave me one more, and the final one would have to be something that's very practical, very family. So something like an E63. Wagon, something like that. The new RS6, whenever that comes out. If BMW made an M5 Touring, but they don't, so something like that. And you probably noticed that I haven't gone for anything ridiculous because they don't really appeal to me. Ridiculous cars, they're cool. I respect and I love like Zondas and they're incredible. But to me, they're just not. I don't know. There's another world for me, you know?
Yeah.
And also, would I ever feel happy or relaxed about driving one even slightly hard? Probably not. Whereas, you know, anything else that's in my garage, I could drive hard. And so, yeah, it'd be lovely to have a Zonda or something silly, a Koenigsegg or something there. But no, ironically, they're not in my dream garage.
the dream cars are more obtainable cars if I won the lottery.
Yeah, that's an interesting point about driving it, because obviously it's been quite nice cars.
Yeah.
And the ones that get driven the hardest...
Yeah.
Like the M2 probably gets driven the hardest.
Yeah, it gets spanked.
And that was something I like about the old 911, is it's been messed with. And because it's been messed with, it's not original.
Yeah.
And on a road trip, someone reversed into the front of it and cracked the bumper. We did a new bumper, or I don't really fixed it, or it was a new bumper, I can't remember. But and resprayed it, and it was like 500 quid.
Wow.
Whereas you do that to a Koenigsegg,
oh,
or like my 40 or something, and it's a very, very, very expensive thing.
Yeah.
So then you worry about parking it, you worry about driving it. I've sort of got with the value of my cars, excluding the Ferrari, that I paid for them.
Yeah.
I am comfortable driving them pretty hard.
Yeah.
And that's when I get the most enjoyment out of, or just like not caring about them too much that you then don't take them anywhere.
Yeah.
Like you want to be like, I'm going to take it, and if it gets muddy, so what? And like, if I have to leave it parked outside overnight, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's a seriously big factor in owning cars. You want to use them.
You've got to, and then this is, I mean, going off subject slightly, but I get asked a lot of people ask me about buying BMWs most of the time, which is probably no surprise, but people will say to me, oh, look, I was looking at M140, but now I'm looking at an M2, the payments I can just about, and then like the first thing, if I've got the time, I'll be like, how much are you stretching to those payments? Because what's the point in having an M2 in your drive if you're paying out your like everything you can afford on the payment? If you can't even afford to fuel it, let alone take it to Europe once a year, what's the point? You might as well have a 120D that you can take to the Alps three times a year. Like, in my opinion, it's the temptation. That's the problem with financing. The temptation. People can afford cars like I can. I could never have afforded like outright.
Yeah.
But then the problem with that is you end up having a car that you can't really afford, and then you can't even afford to fuel it, or you know. And I think that's the thing. It's like, it's always, and that's like another version of what we're just talking about. It's like, there's no point in having something that's really nice in your world that you can't actually afford to, because what is the point in having it there in the first place?
Yeah, it's a really important fact, that. And I think it boils down to why you have the car. Like, some people have cars for different reasons.
Yeah.
And I think it's slightly sad when someone has a car and the sole purpose is sort of showing off that they have that car.
Yeah.
Like, I can afford this car. Look, everyone, I bought this car. When maybe actually they push themselves tons to get the car, and they literally don't drive it because they can't afford to put fuel in it,
or miles in it,
or never put tires on it.
Yeah.
And that's such like a sad thing, because cars bring us such joy.
Yeah.
But it's driving them, like hang with your mates and like
the road trip,
going down to Wales or whatever. Like whatever. That's when you have the most fun, and that can be in a cheap car, an expensive car. But you have to be able to use it.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good point that people need to... And I think think about it anyway.
Even Tim Schmee, like, I remember he tells me a lot about, like, the old days of you, when you grew up together, you, him and Ben, and some of the adventures, some of his best drives were in his Renault Clio, 1990s Renault Clio 1.2, going down to the Alps. And it's like, you think that car... It wasn't worth anything then, it's not worth anything now, and that, you three here are both massive cars, but you all had fun because you were together and there was a certain trip and you probably almost fell off a cliff somewhere, whatever, but there was that moment, and it's like, do you know what I mean? It's those trips, but anyway, that's going off subject.
It is a tricky one, but definitely something that people need to think about. It's not the first thing you think about when you're buying a car, but it's something that's very important.
It is.
Do you have any other questions that people ask you all the time?
They ask me about specs. Ironically, they ask me a lot about colours, and I'm always like, are you serious? Like, the colour is one thing that you need to make your own decision on, you know. Go for the pink stitching on the orange seats. Mostly that, just specs, people are always interested in tyres, you know, what tyres are good, or what I advise. But it's hard. Like yourself, you probably get asked a lot of questions, and sometimes, you know, across all platforms,
and you've only got so much time in the day to answer everyone.
Yeah.
And it's not like, it'd be great if you're getting paid to answer it all. And, but sometimes you're just like, oh, the same question over and over again. But yeah, no, it's mostly spec related or model related or whatever. Yeah.
Because
you know?
Whenever I've got a BMW related question, I always ask you because you've driven a lot of them.
Yeah.
Like, and it's, I think sometimes people say you're like the BMW guy.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. It's just you've driven a lot of BMWs.
Yeah.
You like all cars.
Exactly.
You 100% would drive all cars.
100%.
It's just you get to drive a lot of BMWs.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I was going to say I didn't put one BM in my dream garage, but I did. I put the M2 comp in there. But yeah, no, I'm, yeah, exactly that. And like you appreciate now that you've got the M2.
Yeah.
You know, I think for a certain budget, they're very good cars. They're very fun.
And they are. They're rear-wheel drive.
And they're rear-wheel drive. And that's, you know, that's not going to be forever. The new 1 Series platform is going to be front-wheel drive and X-Drive only, which is going to kill things like the M140. But yeah, no, I'm not. I know a lot about BMs. I spend a lot of time behind the wheel of them. And I worked out the other day that I've owned 7 new BMWs in 5 years.
Yeah.
Which is...
it's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, some of them will work cars and
yeah.
whatever, but that's a lot of cars. But I appreciate anything that's, you know, anything that's decent and hasn't got a Tesla badge on it, basically.
I went in a Model S recently.
Yeah.
And actually it was really nice.
They are impressive. Wasn't Rellini's, was it? No. They are impressive. I'm just a stubborn old man. It's just like...
I think for, like... what you have to do most time is like carry someone around in sort of luxury and quietness.
Yeah.
Electric does that.
Yes.
Better than anything else.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Like
yeah.
An electric car is just so quiet. It's unbelievable what you hear.
Yeah.
When there's not a little tiny bit of engine.
No.
Which must cause all sorts of problems for the designer because they're like, oh, this little button makes a click.
Yeah.
Like, I now hear that and it's annoying.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing.
It is.
We'll see where that goes in the future.
Yeah.
But I think, so that pretty much wraps it up.
Cool, man.
Thanks for coming along.
No, absolute pleasure.
And hanging out. Hopefully the audio's been good.
Yeah, hopefully we picked up one or two of the words. No, it's a pleasure, man. It's like, I love, like you do, we've sat here, I don't know, how long have we been to?
So we are running at the moment 1 hour, 17 minutes.
Okay, 1 hour,
which is quite a long
That's
time.
A long time. But when you're talking about cars, it's things you love. Like,
I know,
you could talk... You know, you could literally talk all day.
Go on forever and ever and ever.
Yeah. No. Absolute pleasure, Sam. And thanks for inviting me along. Keep up all the good stuff that you're doing.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
And hopefully I'll see you again soon.
Yeah. That's a wrap.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.